This is 1360 AM.
WNJC, Washington Township, Philadelphia. Philadelphia's Renaissance Radio Station. Brought to you from Forsyth Broadcasting. Or listen to us at WNJCRadio.com.
All right, welcome. This is your host, Will Hemingway, and you are listening to the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. No tinfoil hats here, no ranting rhetoric, simple, stoic, thoughtful enlightenment on training in risk management, preparedness, and proactive survival. Survival is every day, so live well. The Practice Preparedness Radio Show comes to you live every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time on WNJC 1360 AM, South Jersey, Philadelphia. As always, listen to us live on the internet via my website, practicepreparedness.com. We stream every time on TuneIn. Find a link on our website via the Listen Live button, or if you are in the Delaware Valley, you can listen live at 1360 on your AM radio. As always, you can stream the past shows. You will find them archived on the website under show notes or select one from the scrolling list on the website's right column. Thanks for joining us. I am your host, Will Hemingway. I want to stimulate your little gray cells. Let's get started.
Tonight I had put together a really special show for you, so hopefully we're going to be able to kick that off right now, and we won't waste any more time. If you are a regular listener, you know my friend Jim, who regularly comes on and spends time with us on the show. And tonight we have a rare opportunity to add the good-looking half to the group, his lovely wife, to have a discussion real world about what's happening in their life and some real world experiences recently that I think would be highly beneficial to all of you to hear about. So we're trying to identify whether we're on the air. I want to welcome you, Jim and Leslie. Are you with us?
Hi, Will. How are you?
Hey, Will. How are you?
All righty. So before we get started into the topic at hand, I don't know whether you'll appreciate it or not. Hopefully you don't mind. But I want to tell them that you are far from the wimpy wallflower. Leslie is quite a well-skilled nurse and trained in the field, and also is a Scot, which qualifies her as being able to run with the toughest of them. And with that in mind, that'll kind of set the tone for why this is so important, because we're not talking about someone who whimpers and whines when they stub their toe or breaks a nail. This is a person who can stand on her own two feet and run with the best of them. So recently you had an experience that I thought would be really helpful to share with the rest of the world. And I asked you to come on, and you have been nice enough to agree to. So if you could start out by just giving them a little breakdown on what happened that brings this point to conversation.
Well, Will, I'll tell you what happened. I was making dinner, and I had made a really nice chicken curry in a big cast iron crock pot, which was in the oven, which made it very hot. And I was taking it out of the oven, and it slipped out of my hand and hit the tile floor, which then made the chicken curry land on top of my foot, which immediately burned onto the top of my foot. So I was in a lot of pain. So I hit the floor, and, you know, when it happens to you, you know what to do, but sometimes that memory just goes because it's your pain. When you have to deal with someone else's emergency, you're dealing with it without the pain.
Right. And also the emotion of it being you. You have the shock factor and everything else that comes along with it. And then the real world aspect is that this was a thick sauce probably that didn't just hit you and run off like water. It's not like a boiling water burn. This is something that would stay around, right?
Right, that's true. And so it was a heavy sauce, which then stayed on my food and was able to do quite a big deep burn. But as I was saying, what happens is that I'm dealing with now the pain factor. When it happens to someone else, I don't have that pain factor. So I guess what I did was I tried to think back into my medical knowledge, and I was like, okay, I need cold water. I need to get this cold. So I yelled for the children who are Boy Scouts, and they know what to do too. But they ran and got their dad, who was sleeping, and he came down and was kind of a little out of sorts in order to handle the situation. But we got it in cold water, which is what I really needed to do to get the heat out of it. And the really best part that we did was just keep it in that cold water for a long time. Typically what people do is put it in cold water for a short space of time and then take it out, which is not good. You still have that heat in it.
Mm-hmm. Right, you have to draw the heat out, right?
Right, so we drew the heat out by keeping it in the cold water. And then, every time you take it out, you can feel that just the nerve endings because the skin was gone, off the top of my foot. And then, luckily, I had Silverdine, which is, a cream with base of silver that helps burn. Is what we use in the hospital, and so I'd taken that and put the Silverdine on it. And it's a trial and error thing, because when I put the Silverdine on it, it still had a lot of pain. So I again put a I took that Silverdine off and put it back into water and kept that really cold. And then once I could feel it get the heat being taken out of it, then I put the Silverdine back on. And then obviously in that time you have to stay ahead of the pain by taking pain medication. Which I did, and I just treated it at home. Jim's first thought was to take me to the hospital and treat it, and I said, well, why? I can do what I'm going to do there, I can do at home.
Mm-hmm.
So we made that choice to do that, but just luckily we had those things at home to be able to deal with it.
Right. Now, when we were talking before, you had mentioned that when you went to go use a Silverdine cream, your Silverdine cream had been accidentally broken open and dried out. This is, of course, one of the nightmares for those of us who try to be prepared when we haven't had an opportunity to regularly review what are in our kits and our supplies, that suddenly when you actually need them, you find out you don't have them.
Yeah, in true that world, that Silverdine's not something you use every day, and that Silverdine had just dried out, I wasn't able to use that. So I used that old lifeline, and I called a friend.
Yep,
who lives around the corner that I work with, and Jim ran around there and got the Silverdine that she had, because we all keep it at home. And he came back with that and was able to give me the Silverdine to help me feel better.
Right. And, that's a steps into one of the important points of this, which is, especially with a burn, there are two specific injuries that you will get that require immediate, no delay response, a major cut of bleeding and that of a burn. And the burn normally gets the first vote on the most horrible one to not be prepared for, because the pain and suffering that comes from it is just dramatic if you're not ready and aware of what to do and how to handle it. The Silverdine, now my personal experience back in the early 80s, unfortunately, was second and third degree burns in my crotch. And I was a trained paramedic who drove myself to the hospital, where I was unbelievably ridiculed because I ran in with nothing on, with a robe on, trying to get them to do something with my private parts while I was in unbelievable agony. And of course, they saw that as rather humorous because I worked with most of them on a regular basis. And of course, then there were comparatives and all kinds of other things that they wanted to do. Well, I just wanted somebody to stop the pain and make me stop wanting to tear something off. And then I learned at that moment, when the very nice gentleman who was the intern brought in and slathered me with Silvadine, that I was allergic to it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And try, while the skin is peeling off, trying to clean that off of you in that massive pain on a massively bad burn while the skin is coming off, and then have them go look at me and go, well, what do you want me to do? I'm in the hospital. I'm in massive pain. I can't think. Fix this for me. And this is why I say all the time in my classes and on the air, survival is a team sport, because at some point, no matter how big and bad you think you are, you're going to need someone else to help you. You know, and that really comes right down to it. You have to know those things you have. You have to know what it is that you have to do. The Silvadine helps to cut down on the threat of blistering, and also, more importantly, that of getting an infection, which is quite common with a burn. But the other part of it is that, as you said, it's the simple part. Draw the heat out immediately. This is why they have these great wraps. One that I really like is called a cold wrap by Curad. And then there's a couple of others. They use evaporative gel, which are really awesome for maintaining cool for a long period of time when you don't have running water. All these things only help, though, when you actually have them in hand at the moment that the problem happens.
Absolutely.
So
I think, Will, also I was thinking, you know, yeah, just being prepared with the things at home, the small things that you can have that are easy. You know, the Silvadine is just something that keeps in your medicine cabinet. And, you know, the only thing I would say is be aware of the fact that, like I ran into, that it needs to be replaced after a while. And, you know, when you come to the ER, you know, what they're going to do is exactly the same as what I did at home. However, when it becomes it's you that's hurt, it's hard to just bark orders everybody else to tell them what to do for you, you know?
Right, which is why it's so important for everyone to have a knowledge of what to do who's around you. That's true. And, you know, Silvadine used to be only, I'm pretty sure it used to be only by prescription, but it's OTC now. So it's right. Available OTC. You can get it pretty much anywhere.
Right. The one in the hospital is a little stronger, but yes, you can get it over the counter.
Mm-hmm. So, and of course, the whole thing is that this is about sealing the wound so that you don't get sepsis in it afterward, where the first initial part is about cooling it and drawing the heat out, which is continuing to damage via subcutaneous damage even after the original burn contact. It keeps going. People don't really realize that. I mean, you work as a nurse in the hospital all the time, so I'm sure you see this on a regular basis.
Right. I think that the other thing that happened after the throwing the heat in the Silvadine, it then blistered, and then there's that white tail of, do you burst the blister, do you not burst the blister, do you open it to infection? You know, and the hard part was where it was on, where it hit my foot, it was exactly where my shoe would be. So then I was having to protect it and cover it, you know, and it's just knowing what to do from not just when it happens, it's knowing right through to a heel.
Yeah.
You know, how to protect it from infection, because you've now got open wound where an infection can quite easily step in.
Yeah, especially on the foot where there's so much threat when you have it in the shoe, aside from the abrasion threat. I mean, imagine if you were on a hike somewhere far out where you didn't have access and you were going to have to hike your way back out. It would be so difficult just so difficult. And that's where extraction ends up coming in. But you might not be in a place where an extraction can even necessarily happen. This is why having some abilities to broadly be able to handle these things is so important. If you're going to start a campfire or use a stove or something, then when you're out, you need to have the things that will help you if something goes awry.
You know, Will, I was reading an article today, just recently, up in Berks County. There was a hiker on the Appalachian Trail, and an explosion occurred. And he was actually able to call for assistance and somebody to come help him. But it took all the emergency responders a couple hours to actually get to him, and then a couple hours more to get him out.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing, is that during that time, so you get a friend, so you get, you know, medical help to come to where you are, you know, you have to be prepared with knowledge, which is a skill. You know, you can't just go to a class and say, yeah, I have first aid. You actually have to work that first aid and practice it and then have the equipment there to deal with that issue as well.
Yeah, and the gear, right. So things like the Silvadine, things like some kind of a cooling pad or an ice pack that you can snap to start that process. This is why I'm such a big fan of the evaporative cooling wraps, things like the burn wraps and whatnot, and the evaporative gel, because these things work where you don't necessarily have the access to using water. I've known people who've burnt themselves really badly out on the trail who've gone and dipped it in a running stream. The problem is, who knows what's in there? And if you've exposed, if it's a bad enough burn and you have exposed wound, you could be injecting all kinds of contaminants into that wound that are going to come back to bite you even worse. So it's a catch-22.
It is. You have to find a way to slowly cool your burn back to a reasonable temperature, so it doesn't keep cooking you.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, you do have to be very cognizant of those long-term issues.
Yeah. And, you know, that goes into a lot of burns. One of the biggest threats is getting sepsis from it because of the open wound and the fresh, raw skin that has no experience in the outside world. So it's got no buffer against that. It's basically a subcutaneous entrance rather than a on-the-surface wound. And that's such a big deal. So let me ask you, is Leslie still there?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's been, what, a month and some now, right?
Yeah, it's been a month, and the recovery from it was painful. The nerve pain was probably worse than anything.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact of where it was, so my shoe wasn't able to go on. And I work 12-hour shifts at the hospital, so that's kind of hard to do without walking.
Yeah.
But time just is a great healer, and it just kept on top of it with the Silvadine at first, and then an antibiotic, Neosporin or something like that afterwards, and then just letting it dry at home. And then I still have a scar, but I'm treating that with some moist, you know, just an aloe. Actually, I forgot I put aloe on it too. When it was happening, a friend of mine had given me some actual aloe plant.
Mm-hmm.
And I put the inside of the aloe on it too, which was a great cooling factor.
Yeah, and that's a really great thing, which is why it's really useful to know things about what's around you too, because you may have something like that available to be able to you know, to help yourself above and beyond whatever you carry with you. But this really does, when I first heard about it, all I could think about was that this was, you know, obviously I was concerned about you, but after that, in the larger picture, all I could think about was that this was a class A example of how here are people who are highly skilled, highly trained, and yet it's still a major test of your abilities when it strikes at home, when it strikes you, one of you, and when it strikes in a position, in a place where it's normally not expected. Of course, all accidents are not expected. That's what makes them an accident. But it really does start to open up all kinds of thought processes that we can turn a bad thing into something positive by looking at it as to what the next step is in being prepared on each one of those levels, which becomes a conversation amongst everyone who would be around to know what to do and how to handle it, and then upgrading whatever is in stock to treat it. I had, because of you, I went back to my kits, which are pretty well stocked, and all of my evaporative wraps that are so great and were rated for 2 years had become totally hard and dried out and were completely worthless in less than 9 months of when I had purchased them. So I now have to go do it all over again. And, you know, that's the thing. I mean, the up value that you have when you're in the hospital is that you have such a high rate of activity, you have a high turnover of your supplies. When it's you at home, there's not necessarily such a high demand, and that's where it becomes so much more important to be aware of looking at and keeping an eye on what the condition is of our supplies. So,
absolutely. I think, Will, also one of the good things I had in my favor was I had two great Boy Scouts and a paramedic in my house at the same time, so I was able to get a lot of good help from them, because when you're dealing with an emergency to yourself, even though you know what to do, having that other trained person to help you, and when you have the pain factor to deal with, it's different. If I'm treating your burn when you come into the ER, I'm not dealing with the pain or the emotion. I'm dealing with the fact that you're burned.
Right.
I think that that's a really important thing to tell people.
Yeah, and that clarity of thought is so important, and that is, again, why survival's not, you know, why survival's a team sport. I mean, your family is exemplary, unusual, out of almost anyone I've ever known. That's why we're friends, because you all have a massive amount of skill and knowledge. You're all actively engaged in it, and you all actively practice it in ways that most people only chit-chat about and blabber about. You all do. But it will still challenge even the best of us when we do, when it's something that close. And that's I think, the value of having the conversation about this. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I just wonder how Jim felt about it, how he felt when I was hurt, what he was going to do and how he felt.
Mm-hmm. What do you have to say to that, Jim?
You know, any time that you're dealing with a family member or a child, you know, tensions always rise. You know, with this one here, we were fortunate because it was not a severe injury. It was a relatively minor injury in a really bad place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they talk about, you know, some major areas on the body that you don't want to have burned. The foot, the hands, you know, the face, genitalia.
Yeah.
For all the places that...
I put my vote in for the genitalia.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's important to say because those are the places where you have friction and rubbing, you know, with the legs, the inner thighs, you know, the armpits. Those are all places that a lot of people don't think about. But even as far as a child reaching up to grab mom's hot coffee and spills it on themselves, you know, it's usually a chest down into the groin and down the legs. It may not be a horrible burn per se, but it's in a really bad place because of the places where you're going to have contact. And that's really what Leslie had with the shoes. She was really having a hard time for quite a while trying to get around because she really couldn't put her shoes on in order to do that.
Yeah, and you know, I just keep thinking about how when you plug it into a scenario if you were off grid or you were out on a hike or you were somewhere, whatever, where you were away from general civilization, how that affects your ability to just survive to the next day. Can you get your gear? Can you set up a tent? Can you, you know, you, there are so many things that start to build off of that that just complicate it so much. This is why in my kit, they always make fun of me because I carry 69 pounds or 70 whatever pounds sometimes, but I have ankle braces and knee braces and all that, and you know, and such, so that I have the ability to become mobile, because I experienced that one time up on Hawk Mountain. I was on the Rock River and made it right to the very tip of Hawk Mountain to the lookout, and the last boulder I did something and I wrenched my knee, and I had to hop on one leg down the entire mountain to get back down to the vehicle to leave, and it was the longest few hours of my entire life. And it would have been, you know.
And that's quite honestly very, very typical, you know, as when you're alone or in a stressful place, not your home, power's out, you know, on the Appalachian Trail, you know, 5 miles from, you know, somebody to really help you, you know, that becomes a fairly big mental block. You know, same thing as what Leslie was talking about with, you know, it being a family member. You know, I have seen, you know, emergency services personnel whom I have the uttermost respect for just completely melt.
Yeah.
And go into a brain lock when they're dealing with a young child in a traumatic situation, or, you know, whatever it may be. It looks like they're one of their sons or daughters, or, you know, they have that flash, and you can see, you watch that happen, that moment of stress or a stress point, and they just completely lose their knowledge of what needs to be done. And then the key in survival, as you well know, is how quickly you regain your, quote, sane point that brings you back to that place of, okay, this is how I need to get this fixed. This is how I need to do it. You know, people deal with that regularly, car accidents, slips and falls. You know, a lot of people, when they slip and fall, they say, oh, I don't remember what happened, but that's not necessarily the case. It's more of them falling and them going into that mental block before they can come out of it and realize, oh, I'm okay. I can get out. Nothing's broken.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that pat yourself down from head to toe twice and go, it's all still there. Okay, I'm good. Let's dust ourselves off and get up.
You know, Will, when I fell taking the thing out of the oven and I fell, it was kind of funny because I remember sitting on the floor afterwards going, okay, my neck doesn't hurt, my shoulders don't hurt, all right, does my back hurt? And I kind of did a whole little assessment on myself before I kind of yelled for the kids to go get gym, because I wanted to make sure that if I moved, I wasn't going to do more damage. And, you know, it was that self-assessment. And then the minute Jim came down, I kind of was like, okay, he's going to deal with this now. And, you know, he helped me put it in water. He helped me do the things I needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Jim's right. You do get that first initial stage of, okay, what do I do now? And you just have to get back into your professional emergency mind and not that shock of, oh, no, this has happened to me.
Right. And this is why a lot of the people listening, of course, have no experience in the field whatsoever. And they've never really felt what it's like to think you have it all covered and then completely just go blank when you experience it yourself, or just be so pulled from one end to the other that you can't react the way you assumed in the class that you would. Like in first aid classes, when they talk about major bleed cuts, wounds, and they talk about, and I always get a kick out of how you watch around the room with the people who are generally lay people who've never actually seen one incident of it. And they hand them a 4-inch gauze roll and a 4x10 or 4x6 and folded in 3 gauze pad and say, okay, they have a cut there, what are you going to do? And they just go, oh, this is easy. And until they see the blood running down their arm and they pass out on the floor. My dad, love him to death, he came from a long line of doctors in his family. And during the Korean War, he got drafted and he went in and to the Air Force, and they made him a medical technician. And on the first day on the job, he was in and they wheeled a guy in who had cut himself on the whatever in on the base. And he saw the blood, fell over, broke his nose and passed out, you know, passed out, broke his nose. And he was on a gurney next to him when he woke up. You know, people have no idea unless they've experienced it. So the problem is twofold. One is having a skill set. The other is having some practice at it. Because if you and Jim are skilled as you are and you're challenged by it, you have to have real world practice where it's regular and ongoing in order to really master these things, or you need to surround yourself with a lot of other people who at least have the skill set and the knowledge of what to do. But you know, let me ask you this, when you went to do it, and I don't want to expose a raw nerve, but were you able to find the Silvadine, even though it turned out to not be good, easily when you needed it?
Oh yeah, I mean I'm pretty good at having. I have two drawers in the house that are just probably full of more things than should be in it.
I mean, I know Jim is probably the only person I know who can run up against me on kit building and having massive numbers of redundancies, and he's got some awesomely laid out kits that shame some of mine on the medical side. But it's almost inevitable that you will just have used that thing, or it will just not be where you were sure it was. That goes to a really big piece of it, which is, can it be somewhere so someone other than you can be able to find it? Well, you're screaming at them to go get it right now because you're in massive pain.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much one of the things that we've really tried to do in our house is identify those with everybody in the house, because that's the kind of stuff you're going to need right away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you ask somebody to go get a screwdriver, now that's something you might look for 20 minutes. you know, but the first aid equipment, everybody, you know, that's a life-saving tool. You know, we do a lot of other kinds of activities. You know, the boys like to blacksmith and they chop wood out back and they, you know, they want to make this project or that project. You know, everybody knows where the first aid kits are around the house. That's something that we take pretty seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But wholeheartedly, most people, if you ask them to find you a Band-Aid in their home, it's going to take them a while.
Yeah. And see, that's the thing. It's kind of obvious, but it's really very common. I mean, this is a common problem. I would beseech the listeners to look at themselves in the mirror right now and say, if you looked over your shoulder to whoever else is with you in the room and said, quick, go get me a Band-Aid, like you said, how many minutes would it take? Or would it come back and go, I thought we had some. Oh, you must have used them all up. Okay, well, that's really great. You know, where's a gauze pad? Where's a pressure pad? Where, you know, if I have a bleeder, what are you going to do? Hand me a towel. You know?
Right. But I also think, Will, that the appropriate, not to belittle Band-Aids, but, you know, most people have a box of Band-Aid in the house that's the regular tiny little Band-Aids. But what happens when you have, you know, the kid falls off their bike and grazes their knee and you need a big Band-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, the first aid kit shouldn't, nowadays, with all the things we have around, shouldn't just be Neosporin and a Band-Aid. It should be a little bit better than that. You know, I think that they need to have a big plain ace bandage, you know.
Yeah.
Just things that should be a little bit more expanded, because as the world is changing, we're using bigger and better things like hoverboards and all these things that the kids have now, and their potential for hurting themselves is greater.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why things like the 4-inch gauze rolls and pressure dressings are so critical, because the thing that does worry me, and Jim, I'd be curious, you too, in fact, Leslie, if you have any input on it, I'm very troubled by the fact that I have people say to me, oh, well, if I really cut myself, I'll just use one of those quick clots, because quick clot damages the ability for that wound to heal. So it's not always the greatest answer, especially if you're somewhere where you can actually get to help within a reasonable time. That's so you got hit with a mortar round and you don't want to bleed out because nobody's coming to help you. You know, what do you have to say on that?
Yeah, so, you know, quite honestly, it depends on the location of the wound and the size of the wound. You know, we always tell people, you know, when I teach first aid classes, or when we're doing EMT classes, we tell everybody, you know, start with the basics. You know, you got direct pressure points, elevation, tourniquet. You know, and tourniquet is really your last choice to go on. I usually take that one step further, because tourniquets and the quick clot or Celox, you know, blood sport, whichever one that people are thinking about using, they can be kind of dangerous. You know, one of the things that we teach with our active shooter medical group is that you really got to watch the wounds that you're putting those things on. So the older ones have a mechanism in them that heat up,
mm-hmm.
and when they heat, causes you to get a burn.
Yeah,
that's one more thing that you have to deal with. The newer ones don't have that,
mm-hmm.
But there's still a lot of that old stuff out there. You know, sometimes I walk through the gun shows and I'm walking around going, "Ooh, geez, don't." You know, like, you know, people are picking it up and reading them. Yeah, I want to walk over to them and say, don't do it.
Right, because they're old stock. That's why they're there as surplus, because the military got rid of them after they realized that they were not that good and went to the new version.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you have the other piece of, you know, where is the wound at? You know, do I want to be putting Celox or quick clot or blood sport on a chest wound? I really don't, because you're going to suck it in your lungs, and that just generally tends to be bad.
Yeah.
You know, if I can put a tourniquet on, I'd rather put a tourniquet on somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's a lot of good documentation for people not losing their limbs, you know, when they put a tourniquet on, and they have them on there for 8, 9, 10 hours in length, waiting to get to a field hospital or a permanent hospital, even when they do blocks in the operating rooms to do surgery on a tendon or on an arm or a leg, they're putting these tourniquets on for longer periods of time. And we're not talking about the cheap, cheesy ones that are out there. You know, we're talking about good 1-inch to 1.5-inch width tourniquets that are meant for that.
Right.
You know, and again, you know, you can go out and people are selling all kind of medical equipment, but just because they sell it doesn't mean that it's really good stuff. You know, different people come up and go, what do you think about this tourniquet? And I'm like, don't do it.
Right. Like the rat.
Like,
right. Like rat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, And other ones, they come up and they're like, so what do you think about this kind of tourniquet? And I'm like, that's probably one of the best on the market.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, you really got to know what you're looking at, know what you're going to buy. You know, I see people that buy the 2x2s, 3x3s, or the 4x4s that are in one sterile package, and there's about 1,000 of them. Well, that's great in an operating room, but not really very practical for, you know, Johnny who falls and scrapes his knee. Once you open the package, now they're all contaminated.
Yeah, yeah. And that, you know, that becomes the same thing in so many areas of this survival and preparedness side, is that sometimes buying it in bulk when it's going to be open and you shorten the length of life of the hole is not the best deal. You're saving money, but not necessarily saving anything because you won't have anything once you use it the first time. And if you have to open them, you're probably not going to be in a place where you're going to be in the cleanest atmosphere anyway, so that's even going to make it worse.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
good.
Finding a good kit is not about going to the store and buying one. There's ones that are pretty good that start you along on a good path, but building a kit is really, as you well know, you know, you build your kits from scratch.
Absolutely.
You gotta have stuff in it that you are physically going to use, you know, and part of that use is something that you've had training on.
Yeah. So I don't want to get away from the point, I don't want to belabor it, but I don't want to get away from it before we answer a question that maybe many people may try to answer on their own without the experience and knowledge that you have. When we mentioned about the tourniquets and the difference between good and bad, we'll stick to the good ones. I know you are a believer in the soft tee, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big believer, too. I think that when you get the soft TW, which is the 1.5 tourniquet wide, they're not the cheapest one. It's certainly not a rat, but I don't want a piece of paracord cutting off my arm. I want something that's going to actually work and be dependable. And a soft T, you have 10, I think, on your one kit, don't you?
So in one of my work bags, we actually carry 19.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Well, that's triage time right there. Yowza.
Yeah, well, and you know, the thing is that we buy two different types of tourniquets at work.
Mm-hmm.
We buy the real cat tourniquets, not the ones made in China. And we buy the soft TYs. And you know, those are really the only two that I have a lot of confidence in.
Mm-hmm. So just so people know that that's basically the hallmark for what you want to be looking at. You don't want to be looking at some of these chintzy ones. And look, it's your life. So in the end, saving money and spending $5 on something that could keep you from losing your life, from bleeding to death, or someone you care about, don't buy something that was made in China and get it from Wish.com or something. I love Wish.com for some stuff, but don't do it with a tourniquet. Don't do it with things that are going to matter for your life, because you need to know the source, you need to know the value of it and the quality. It's so critical.
It is.
So, anything else you want to add? We've got about 6 minutes left. Anything else you want to throw into it?
So, there's really that piece of medications and having medications in your home. So, we talked a little bit about Silvadine here, and I know Silvadine is not something that most people keep in their homes. But, you know, things to break fevers, things to keep you from sitting on the toilet for the next, you know, 24 hours. Things that can break a simple infection. Triple antibiotic ointment. You know, something like moleskin. you know, all are very effective. I consider Moleskine part of my medication kit for blisters because it is probably one of the most important things that you can carry with you. You know, expiration dates are something that are mandatory that get put onto medicines, but there's some really good documentation through the Federal Emergency Management, through the government, through the military, that say that the expiration dates in most things are much longer than what they say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I am a firm believer in when you get medicines, you finish your medicines. You don't try and shortchange it, because that opens you up to having a drug-resistant disease.
Mm.
You know, there's all kind of parts and pieces that really play into that. Well, what kind of stuff do I need to have in my house? You know, if you have a young child, you have Benadryl. Somebody gets stung by a bee, you know, the time to find out you're allergic is not really at that point. And you need to make sure that, you know, you can deal with those life-threatening kind of things. When you have a temperature of 102, 103, you know, in you or your child, being, you know, the time to realize that you don't have something to break that fever is long past.
Right. And that's the whole thing, and that was the point of why I wanted to get to this with you guys, is that I think it's so important when people hear real experiences from real people and they can plug into it what would happen to them and where they are now, because this is a matter to take a moment and be introspective and say, where are we, where were we, where are we going, and what are we actually doing right now so that that never happens, and that's really the key.
The other thing I was thinking, Will, it wouldn't be a bad idea is, you know, people don't know what to do as far as what medications or what things you should keep in hand. Make a list and ask your doctor, you know what I mean? Make mm-hmm. a list and write it out, and then come to somebody that you know that's kind of good with that stuff and say, what else do I need?
That's a great idea. Great idea. All right. Well, let me ask you a last question, Leslie, about your current experience. What did you do to be able to become mobile, and how fast did you to be able to go back to work? Did you wear one of those open shoes like they give someone with an ankle break or something?
No, I actually went. I wear dance clothes to work, which is kind of a clog.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not a good idea. So what I did was I went back to the old sneakers. I took the laces out of the one sneaker that where my foot was hurting. Mm-hmm. And I took the laces out of it, and I wore it kind of open. And then I, you know, I just made sure it was covered at work. And then when I was home, I let it air to dry it out.
Mm-hmm.
But you just adapt and overcome.
Right,
you know, adapt and overcome. You just have to know some skills and adapt them to what you need.
Awesome. And that's really important too, is being able to look at the, and that's all about critical thinking and creative problem solving, which is such a wonderful skill and necessary if you intend to survive any kind of a challenge. As I always say, the biggest challenges to our survival always happen right here at home, not some big disaster or some bomb falling or whatever. It happens every day. You can see it in the news. You're just lucky enough that it wasn't you last time.
Absolutely.
So I really appreciate you guys taking time with us, and sorry it was a little messy in the start, but we got it on and got it done, and I really appreciate you coming to spend time with us, Leslie and Jim.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having us, Will. We appreciate it.
Thank you. All right, we'll catch up with you again later, and I'm going to close out. So thanks again for joining us, and we'll talk to you later on.
Thank you.
So, okay, and so, in any event, so hopefully that'll give you some things to think about, because I thought when this happened and when Jim told me, and then I talked to Leslie right after it happened, I thought, what better than listening to two people who are highly skilled and trained to be able to listen to them and their experience and pick up on from them the ability to learn from their experience how to do better. Because in the end, with all of these challenges that we will run into, we really need to recognize the fact that every challenge demands instant response with instant results, because anything less will enhance the problem, not the solution. So as Leslie put it so well, this is when you sit down and go through the list of things, put it together, like Jim lined out some great line, fever, things like Imodium for the runs, triple antibiotic, Moleskin, I carry blister care with everything, Benadryl, Motrin or some other kind of fever controller, pain controllers like ibuprofen if you can take it. If not, talk to your doctor. If you have the opportunity, and I will stress again what Jim said, don't cut short your care, but do take care to make sure that you, if you have an opportunity to have, what? If you have the opportunity to have extra, maybe, however, of things like amoxicillin, Cipro, Floxin, and others, then it never hurts to have that on hand. If not, you need to know a way to get it as rapidly as possible. That means, where's the closest 24-hour pharmacy? Where's your opportunity to get to a doctor so that you can get them to write you a script if you need one, et cetera, because in the end, that's what you need to do. And this goes all into a kit that's clearly marked. Just because it's in your house does not mean that you shouldn't be able to grab the whole kit, tell someone else where it is. What if you only have visitors in your house, and send them to a certain place where it's hanging on the wall? They grab it and bring it so that you can instruct them, or you can actually do the...
And that, unfortunately, will be it for this edition of the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. I am your host, Will Hemingway. Thank you for spending your time with us today. Don't forget to click the links at the top of practicepreparedness.com, to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and meetup.com. Until next time, please don't wait until it's too late. Live proactively, act with purpose every day, have a plan, and practice. Because, as I always say, there is no disaster when you are prepared. We hope that you'll join us next time for the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. Have a good day.